Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain.
Limbo, I don't want some. Welcome. Welcome, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, there's a lot going on. Scooter Libby, nailed. He's guilty. We're not sure exactly yet of what or all the details, but we will have those shortly. The verdict is being announced as we speak, and we will have those details for you on the Scooter Libby trial and you know, all the ramifications behind it and the meaning of it and et cetera, you know, that sort of thing. At the same time, the sale of Air America Radio has gone through. This is sort of inside radio, but I think it's also national news. And what is the mission of Air America Radio? I think these, at least a couple of things, are certainly worth talking about. Number one, to provide good, high-quality, entertaining, interesting, informative programming. And number two, let's try to move America in a way that doesn't multiply terrorism, like, you know, attacking Muslim countries. And instead of just talking about exporting democracy, let's start practicing it at home. Wouldn't that be a nice thing? Wouldn't that be an extraordinary thing? I mean, I can't say enough about how all in favor I would be of, well, it's what we're all working for. And we all know it. I mean, it's what we're all working for. So it sounds like, from what I'm hearing, that four out of the five counts that Scooter Libby was charged with, he's been convicted on. And again, as I said, we'll have all the details for you, and you know, as the significance of it, the consequences of it, the meaning of it, all as time goes on. But you know, in the larger picture, I mean, let's keep the big picture in mind here. This was supposed to be an investigation into who brought down a CIA operation called Brewster Jennings. There was this off-the-shelf company, Brewster Jennings, that was operating out of CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, that had offices all around the world. And in these offices around the world, they had people who were going out and talking with local terrorist groups and whatnot, saying, hey, you know, want to buy some weapons? And, you know, they were engaging in the illicit arms trade. And one of them, by the way, was Iran. They were very, very they were very much about gathering intelligence about Iran. And people would say, yeah, sure, I'd like some shoulder-fired missiles. And the guy would say, well, I have to check, you know, with the CEO of our company, Valerie Plame, back in Washington, D.C. And so when Valerie Plame's name got outed, and we now have, what, seven people in the administration who are, like, running around blabbing her name, Scooter Libby, just one of them, Dick Cheney included, Karl Rove included, who, you know, people who were leaking this name, aggressively leaking her name. When her name got out into the public world, for all we know, people were murdered. I mean, there were people all around the world who were dealing with terrorists in real time. And those terrorists knew that they were working with an organization called Brewster Jennings that was headed up by a woman named Valerie Plame that everybody thought was an international trading organization that was willing to do dirty work on the side. And when Bob Novak broke the story that, no, in fact, it's a CIA front operation, we don't know. To this day, we don't know, because the investigation has not been done, because it's been blocked by this administration. We don't know how many people were murdered around the world, how many people who were working with the CIA, how many people were working for us. We don't know how much intelligence was compromised. We do know that we went blind with regard to what was going on in Iran. And Bush's response to this.
And I don't know if we're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah, he just didn't have any idea at all. Nope. Even though it was his vice president, his senior advisor, Karl Rove, his vice president's number two guy, Scooter Libby. So Libby, charged with two counts of perjury, two counts of false statements of facts, one count of obstruction of justice, faces a maximum penalty of 30 years in jail. He's been found guilty of lying to a probe into the leak of classified information. And if what I'm hearing is correct, from Alex in the studio there in New York, Alex, you're apparently looking at a wire services better than mine. You said four out of five counts?
Yep, that's right.
Yes, that's right. Okay.
And the only one he was not found guilty for was false statement of fact.
Okay. And you said that on the air, so our listeners heard that?
Yep, exactly.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you, Alex. Interesting. Yeah, he was not found guilty on count three, a charge that he'd given false statements to the FBI about his conversation with Matt Cooper of Time magazine. So four out of the five. So the question now, of course, is, you know, what's going to happen? Obviously, he's probably going to appeal. Is he going to be kept out of jail during the appeal? Interesting question. Will the appeal be able to be dragged out until the end of the Bush administration so that George can pardon him? Another interesting question. Is he going to continue to, relatively speaking, keep his mouth shut? Is this going to lead to investigations of other people inside the administration? Is Joe Wilson ever going to see his dream realized?
At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
And Joe Wilson, being an old ambassador and a, you know, an old political hand, doesn't just throw names out.
And trust me, when I use that name, I measure my words.
Yeah. And that was, what, three years ago? I think at least 3 years ago that Joe Wilson first made that statement. And now we know, yeah, Karl Rove, definitely part of this. But he didn't make the mistake of lying to the grand jury, apparently. And that, you know, this is like Bill Clinton and Monica, you know, had he simply said to the grand jury, yeah, Monica and I were having a great old time, that would have been the end of that, at least legally speaking. So, you know, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. Well, the problem here is the crime hasn't been investigated, in my mind. And I think the minds of many Americans. And, you know, in large part because the Republicans have been so successful, so very, very successful at blocking any kind of an investigation into any of the crimes of this administration. I mean, you heard, if you were listening to the program yesterday, you heard my conversation with former Congressman Bob Barr, the Republican from Georgia, who was talking about how he felt that if, and I'm putting words in his mouth here because he was very careful. He did not use the impeachment word. I did. And he agreed with me. So I was saying, you know, if it is demonstrated that George W. Bush had broken the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that had been spying on Americans illegally, and that act specifies that any federal officer can face up to 2 years in prison for each individual violation. If it was demonstrated that George Bush was guilty of having broken that act, something that, by the way, he has bragged about, is that something that Congress should consider impeaching him over? And Bob Barr's response was words to the effect of Congress should take that very seriously, and Congress should consider that. I think that we're looking at numerous impeachable offenses, and that we need to say to the world, and we need to say to Americans, enough already. This is a nation of laws. Here, now just taking this to the next step, I have been saying for years, literally for years, there's a piece that I wrote for Common Dreams almost 2 years ago called Why is Bush Spying on Democrats? And why aren't the Democrats talking about it? I mean, the Bush administration doesn't deny that they've been spying on Americans. They brag about it. They're listening to our phone calls, reading our emails, looking at our bank transactions, gathering databases on our medical records, what we charge on our credit cards, where we travel, all of this kind of stuff. Nixon was doing the same thing. And a good chunk of what Nixon was doing was specifically to spy on Democrats. So I was saying 2 years ago, why doesn't the Democratic Party say, George Bush, we know that you're spying illegally on Americans. We want to know if you're spying on Democrats. I mean, after all, there was this case. This was in January of 2004. Charlie Savage writing for the Boston Globe. Republican staff members of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee infiltrated Democratic computer files for a year, monitoring secret strategy memos and periodically passing on copies to the media, Senate officials told the Globe. From the spring of 2002 until at least 2003, members of the GOP committee staff exploited a computer glitch, yeah, right, that allowed them to access restricted Democratic communications without a password. Trolling through hundreds of memos, they were able to read talking points and accounts of private meetings discussing which judicial nominees Democrats would fight and with what tactics. And they leaked this stuff to the press. Well, now comes this latest. This is from the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition, which is Sibel Edmonds' group, has obtained a copy of an official complaint filed by a veteran FBI special agent, Gilbert Graham, with the Department of Justice, saying that the Bush administration, in fact, is not only using their spying against you or me, and not only using their spying against terrorists, they're spying on high-profile U.S. public officials. In other words, Bush is wiretapping Democrats. Where are the Democrats on this? It's time to raise some hell. 16 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
Coming on. Some days you gotta dance and give it up when you get the chance. Cause when the world doesn't make no sense and you're feeling just a little too tense, gotta loosen up those chains and dance.
And welcome back. It's your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Air America Radio here with you. Tom Hartman, 21 minutes past the hour. Yeah, Scooter Libby got nailed. But really what we have to, it is so important, you know, what the media is going to do. It is so important that we keep this in the larger context. What the media is going to do is they're going to try and take this down to the micro story of Scooter Libby and, you know, what about this and what about that and which verdict was it and who did he lie to and what about Tim Russert? And there's going to be a lot of discussion in the media about other media people because there's kind of a media within the media story here. It's like, you know, did he lie to Tim Russert? Did he lie to Matt Cooper? Was it, you know, who was it? Which one of the media stars was it that Scooter Libby was lying to? And all that kind of stuff, you know, or that he heard it from, or that he told it to, or who was it, you know, in the Bush administration that told it. The larger issue, and the one that we need to be focusing on, is that there has been a criminal conspiracy in this administration virtually from the beginning. Actually, a series of criminal conspiracies to subvert the principles on which this nation was founded, to take us to an unnecessary war, the last time a major industrial power declared war on another major nation for no good reason other than the political advantage of its leader was in the 1930s when Hitler invaded Poland. I mean, that's how unprecedented our attack of Iraq was. So you have a criminal conspiracy leading to that. You have this criminal conspiracy to bring down Brewster Jennings and bring down Valerie Plame by way of punishing Joe Wilson, which in and of itself was part of a larger conspiracy to make sure that anybody, Joe Wilson was just one of many, anybody who spoke out against the Bush administration, who had any credibility and had any kind of high profile, got destroyed. You have an administration that was functioning for all practical purposes, as if it was a mob family. And there's something just fundamentally anti-American about that. It's fundamentally un-American. And now it gets really interesting here, where the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition says, yeah, they've been spying on us. We knew that all along. And it's not just, this is Ahmed and he's been talking to, you know, his brother in Saudi Arabia. No, it might be, Joe Average American talking to Joe Average Sixpack over here. And that, you know, was enough to give people the creeps. Although still, you have people like, we had a caller into the program yesterday saying, I don't care if they listen to my conversations. I got nothing to hide. Well, there are some people who have something to hide, and it's not because it's illegal. It's because it has to do with strategy, and that's called politics. Keep in mind, the reason why Richard Nixon was impeached, or was going to be impeached, the reason why articles of impeachment were drawn up against him, and he knew full well they would have been successful in the House and probably in the Senate. The reason why John Conyers was one of the authors of those articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon was because he was using the power of surveillance, of the surveillance apparatus of the United States, to spy specifically on members of the Democratic Party to gain information that could be used on a partisan basis And now we're finding this from two FBI whistleblowers confirm illegal wiretapping of government officials and misuse of FISA. What we don't know at this point is whether this is the administration looking at, in other words, a Republican administration looking at Republican officials who might not be towing the party line, for example, federal prosecutors who are not aggressive enough in going after Democrats or who are too aggressive in going after, like, Duke Cunningham, or if it's wiretapping by the Republican administration of Democratic members of Congress. We don't know that yet, but we do know that it's out there. And as I've been saying for 2 years, how the Democratic Party can think that this administration is secretly wiretapping people without warrants and there's no political component to it, I mean, how naive can they get? The only reason that the Bush administration would refuse to go before a FISA court to get a warrant is if they knew that they wouldn't get it. And the only reason that they wouldn't get it if it had anything to do is because it has nothing to do with terrorism. And if it had nothing to do with terrorism, why would they want to wiretap somebody? Well, if you look at the history of this administration, because of politics, which brings us back to what happened in 2002. Which was never investigated by the Senate because Bill Frist prevented any investigation. And frankly, I think it needs to be investigated right now. And this was that one of the guys working, his name was Manuel Miranda. He was working for the Judiciary Committee. And then when this came out, he became the chief judicial nominee advisor for the Senate Majority Leader's office, for Bill Frist's office. Prior to that, he'd been working for Orrin Hatch, the Republican from Utah. And Miranda had for over a year been hacking into the computers of Democratic members of the United States Senate, including Ted Kennedy, and taking that information and not just feeding it to Republicans, but feeding it to Bob Novak, who was publishing it in the newspapers, thus thwarting Democratic attempts to block the nomination of right-wing crank judges. And I'm of the opinion that's what the Bush administration is doing again right now. And we need to use the Libby trial to remind us of it. 27 minutes later.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
Free Speech Zone. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America Radio, where you will not get hauled away if you have a No Blood for Oil bumper sticker on your car, even though now we know that that was actually official White House policy. Number one, was that a violation of the law? I think so. And number two, how is the press letting Bush get away with that one? I mean, it's just like there's so much. There's so much. It's just it's going flying by all the time. Our number, 1-866-303-2270. Chris in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom. It's going to be interesting to watch Tony Snow try to tap dance his way around this at the next White House briefing. You know,
I guarantee he will do it.
I'm kind of heartened. I've been sort of jumping around the cable news channels. Everybody's covering this, of course. And three times on separate channels, I have heard discussion as to if Fitzgerald does not go after the core conspirators in this. And it was proven in court that Richard Armitage, Dick Cheney, leaked this information about Valerie.
And Karl Rove.
Karl Rove, yes, a conspiracy, a deliberate attempt to destroy and discredit Joe Wilson for his Times article. If they do not go after those people, which was Fitzgerald's original charge, that he could be up on internal charges of prosecutorial malfeasance. And everything I've heard about Mr. Fitzgerald, he won't stand for that. So there's got to be more coming here. Has to be.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's and this is one of the reasons I would submit to you, by the way, why the Bush administration has fired six or seven federal prosecutors.
Yes.
They don't want more of this kind of thing to happen.
Close that barn door. You know, there's other little things here. You know, Libby's going to be out on bail before sentencing on this. But he still has to pay for all this. He's a very wealthy man, but he had 11 lawyers. And this has cost millions and millions of dollars. I don't know what his defense fund is looking like right now. I will say one thing as an aside. If I'm ever sitting in court being prosecuted and my defense attorney starts crying, I'm running for the door right away. I don't know why he didn't. Anyway, you have a good day. Wait a second.
Chris, what did I miss? Libby's defense attorney started crying in court?
Yes, in his final argument, in the closing arguments, you know, they presented almost no defense whatsoever, which
right.
angered the judge to no end.
Right.
But,
right.
yeah, in his final argument, his chief defense attorney began crying in front of the jury, saying, give this good man back to me, give this good man back to me.
Oh, man.
That would have been a hint had I been sitting in the dock at that point.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I'm having a lot of fun watching this, and I'll be listening to you, too. And
okay.
drive on American justice.
There you go. Chris, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. David in Seattle, Washington. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, thanks for being there. You know, did we the people really need 6 years to realize that this administration cares nothing about national security because they wear their little flag-waving lapel pins? I mean, the reason why the American people there's no reason why the American people should fall for their lies any longer. I mean, they wrap themselves around the flag, they wrap themselves around the troops, they wrap themselves around national security, which they don't care about. You know, they wrap themselves around this phony terror war. I mean, and they wrap themselves around these signing statements that they feel
well. You have to understand here, David, that, for example,
that when we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
You see, you know, we appear to have lost somebody. What happened here? There goes the button. Okay, we lost our call. Anyhow, I guess just the sound of Bush's voice spooked him away. Mark in New York City. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
My wife and I just love your show. We love the intellectual debate. We want to thank you so much for everything that you do. It's just
thank
a great
you.
Job. Just a quick question. I want to get your take, and I won't stand. I know you got a lot of calls coming in on this. Isn't the question this about the Libby case? It's not about outing of Valerie Plame, but it's why she was outed. If you
yes.
look at who, the question is this: who forged the Niger documents and why? And
well,
I
it
think
was apparently
you,
Italian intelligence, by the way.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I think there's a pretty broad consensus in the intelligence community that came out of the intelligence service of Italy.
Right.
And it wasn't a particularly brilliant job. It was so obvious that when they handed it off to the British, they spotted it immediately. But that it was done by Silvio Berlusconi in an effort to curry favor with George W. Bush.
Right. And if you look at, I think if you look at Michael Ledeen and his connections with the Italian intelligence.
Oop, we lost another one. It's amazing. It's now we started this program talking about how they're wiretapping all these folks, and they're actually wiretapping, and the real wiretapping, what's really going on is they're actually wiretapping Democrats. Now, unless somehow our phone lines are being grabbed by somebody else in New York City, which doesn't make any sense. Len, let's try another one. Len in New York City. Hey, Len, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm one of those
Hopefully.
Democrats that would like to move on. My biggest
okay.
concern was when you reported last week from the CPAC thing.
Yes.
And you didn't talk, and nobody was talking about the fact that Grover Norquist got, I think, each one of those Republicans to sign these no tax increase pledges.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's the guy that supposedly was money laundering with Jack Abramoff, and nothing's gone on with that. Now, he's the root of all evil, as far as I'm concerned, as it's going right now. And we've got to stay on his case. I don't know why nothing's gone on. We haven't heard anything about this money laundering that he was doing with Abramoff.
Well, for some reason, a lot of federal prosecutors are just not looking into Republican crimes. And
right, but we
for some reason, the ones who are looking into Republican crimes suddenly find themselves fired.
Right, but Congress should not let this go because basically
I agree.
This guy is the one under the radar guy who's undermining this system of government, and nobody seems to be holding this story to account. Yeah. I mean, I think Ann Coulter was a sideshow compared to what's going on with, you know, everybody standing up and saying, I won't raise taxes, I won't raise taxes.
Yeah, when in fact, what they're actually pledging to do is we will continue to borrow money from our children and grandchildren so that billionaires and millionaires can have tax breaks. And it's nuts. Ed in San Juan Capistrano. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Tom. I was just wondering why we haven't heard, I only heard it once on the news about 2 weeks ago, that the Democratic headquarters in New Hampshire was broken into.
Yeah, it's...
Why haven't we heard anything more about it?
Well, I don't think that they know anything more about it other than that it was broken into. And the question, obviously, was it broken into by Republicans looking for intelligence, or was it broken into by some meth head who was looking for a computer that he could sell?
I don't think it's the second.
Frankly, I don't either, but,
So we didn't name it water rate, did we stop looking into it?
Right. Is this going to be another third-rate burglar? No, I suspect that people are looking into it. I'm hoping that the New Hampshire police are doing their
Democratic
job.
The Democratic Party has to get off its fingers and sit on their hands and do something.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you, Ed. And that's why I said I think that they need to be, right now, investigating in Congress. I mean, the question, just imagine, if Clinton and Gore were president and vice president, and Gore had ordered the outing of a CIA officer and brought down an intelligence operation that probably led to the death of people and certainly led to the destruction of our ability to gather intelligence on a foreign countries and terrorist organizations. I mean, first of all, they'd have his head. But secondly, the way they'd have his head is through congressional investigations. There would be right now a Senate committee subpoenaing Al Gore if he was vice president. And I sure hope, and, you know, I don't want to make this as a, I'm kicking the Democrats because they haven't done it. I sure hope that they do it and that they do it fast. And frankly, I believe that what is going to cause them to do it is if enough of them hear from you. If we the people call our elected representatives, and the toll-free number for Congress, by the way, there's a bunch of them out there. Here's one, 866-220-0044. 866-220-0044. Okay, that'll get you to the switchboard, and you tell them your state, and they'll tell you who your two senators are. You tell them your zip code, they'll tell you who your member of Congress is. You have three elected representatives unless you live in Washington D.C. You have three elected representatives there in Washington D.C. and speak with each one of them and say, I would like some of these crimes investigated. Is Bush illegally wiretapping us? Why was Brewster Jennings brought down? There was a criminal conspiracy, apparently, inside the White House. Linda in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Linda.
Hi there. My name is Linda Boyd, and I have been heading up the campaign to impeach here in Washington State.
And good on you.
First of all, I want to congratulate New Mexico. They have passed their third committee hearing in their Senate, and they will go to a floor vote. So congratulations to them, and now for us.
This is for an impeachment resolution that under Jefferson's laws would have to be introduced into the floor of the House of Representatives for impeachment, even if an individual member of the House is too timid to do so.
That's correct. And these resolutions from the state can give our representatives to Congress courage and join our voices together in a show of force to demand impeachment investigations.
Right.
Certainly,
and the website for the one in Washington State is?
That's right. The one in Washington State is coming right up. We had a fantastic hearing. Rocky Anderson, mayor of Salt Lake City, was here. Yeah. Colonel Ann Wright.
Linda, we have to take a break right now. Just if you have the website so we can toss it out to folks.
Eastside Fellowship of Reconciliation. Impeach.
Okay.
Can you put me back on?
I can't, but is there a website, or how should people find it?
It's eastsidefor.org.
Eastsidefor.org/impeach. I got it. Thank you, Linda. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Thank you. Sometimes I still wake up fighting name. And where this road I'm heading down my lead, I guess that's just the cowboy in me. The thirst around the restlessness, the heart of stone I sometimes get. The things I've done for foolish pride, to me that's never satisfied. The face that's in the mirror when I don't like what I see, I guess that's just the cowboy in me.
Welcome back to your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. And let me just, on a personal note, wish my wife, Louise. We've been married 34 years, and today is her birthday. Her 35th birthday? Must be. Happy birthday, Louise. I love you. And welcome back to our program. We have the question that we've been talking about here. Is Scooter Libby going to pursue the, or excuse me, is Patrick Fitzgerald, now that Scooter Libby has been convicted, is Fitzgerald going to pursue the criminal conspiracy that Libby was clearly a part of? I think this conviction demonstrates that he was a part of, or is he not going to pursue it? And he was asked this question, is he going to pursue further prosecutions, which might even include a prosecution or an investigation anyway, of the vice president or any other members of this criminal conspiracy? This is not exactly how the question was phrased, obviously, but that was the gist of it. And here is the answer that Patrick Fitzgerald gave.
I would say this. I do not expect to file any further charges. But basically, the investigation was inactive prior to the trial. I would not expect to see any further charges filed. We're all going back to our day jobs. If information comes to light, or new information comes to us that would warrant us taking some action, we will, of course, do that.
In other words, see you later, guys. Very disappointing. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind?
Yes, happy birthday to your wife, Tom. And
on her behalf, thank you.
Pardon me?
On her behalf, thank you. She's okay. Probably all embarrassed now. So.
Well, I tell you what, I was originally going to call because I did hear your interview with former Congressman Bob Barr, but of course there's bigger news today now with the Libby conviction, 4 out of 5. And I did not hear Mr. Fitzgerald's comments until just now. That's kind of disappointing, but I guess not too surprising, because I think you make a good point. If this had been a Democratic administration, with all of the stuff that's going on, the war, the 9/11 attack itself, the wiretapping, what have you.
Look at everything they went through to get Clinton. I mean, you know, they had to get a federal prosecutor down in Arkansas in place. They were all upset that the guy wouldn't go after Hillary. They went through Whitewater. That didn't show up anything. They went through the Filegate thing, the Rose law firm, the travel, you know, they fired a travel agent in the White House. Oh my God, let's see if we can turn that into a scandal.
Right.
You know, it was one thing after another. And finally, they got, you know, they discovered Monica almost by accident, you know, as a consequence of looking into another indiscretion of Bill's.
Sure.
And he had the, you know, he was stupid enough to lie about it before a grand jury, and suddenly the Republicans were just, oh my God, we've got him, isn't this wonderful? And off they went. And here, I mean, it's like it's being handed to the Democrats on a platter. I mean, here you've got an administration that's behaving like a mob family.
To me, this completely dwarfs Watergate or possibly even Iran-Contra, which are the two great scandals of my lifetime. And you mentioned.
Oh, yeah. And if you look at what happened in Iraq with the hundreds of millions, certainly tens of billions of dollars that have gone missing, that dwarfs Teapot Dome, which nearly brought down the, what was it, the Warren Harding administration? I forget which one.
Yeah,
but
Albert
Fell. Yeah, I think Fell was working for Harding in the 20s. And that was a $300,000 bribe to the secretary, you know, to the Secretary of the Interior to get access to oil in Wyoming. Well, here we've got, you know, billions of dollars to get access to oil in Iraq. And, you know, nobody's even talking about it. I mean,
I think the real problem is the media. Even the so-called liberal media, you know, it isn't just Fox News. It almost seems as if they're just afraid to go after this guy, Bush and Cheney. And of course, you mentioned the thing about the mob, you know. Well, of course, Bush Senior was the CIA director for a while,
Yeah.
And I've got to believe there's probably some organized crime influence in this administration. I just wonder whether some people are either trying to protect corporate interests or whether there is fear of the CIA, which probably still works with the mob, believe it or not. And if there's just fear on the part of some people in government and in the media not to blow the whistle too loud because maybe these people will retaliate. And if,
I think this is so much bigger, Rick, and so much more powerful than the old Italian mafia. I think we're talking about multinational corporations,
well, sure,
and power structures that involve hundreds of billions of dollars. Perhaps,
well,
trillions of dollars,
not
just, Santos Trafficati and, $5 million here.
Well, sure, but when I bring up the mob, I just mean they would be very much the junior partners in this. You know, they would be the enforcers, more or less, if somebody gets out of line.
No, absolutely. And, good point, Rick. Thank you for the call. Karen in Federal Way. Hey, Karen, got about a minute before we've got to wrap up the hour.
Okay, yes, Tom, happy birthday to Louise and Merry Fitzmas.
Be sure
to bring out your Fitzmas tree and put tiny little subpoenas on for Bush, Cheney, Rove, and so forth and so on. And on the very top, a great big impeachment star.
Yeah, well, now that Patrick Fitzgerald has all but said that he's not going to continue doing the job that he was originally charged with, which is looking into who engaged in the criminal conspiracy to out a CIA agent and bring down Brewster Jennings. Now that he's on the record saying he's not going to pursue that, he's going to go back to his day job, I think it's important that we say Congress needs to pursue it. Congress needs to be pursuing this thing immediately. And the toll-free number for your member of Congress is 866-220-0044. That gets you to Capitol Switchboard. You can ask for your member of Congress, the House of Representatives. We each have one. Or for either of your two state senators, you can make three calls. And you can talk to all three of them. Talk to their staff people. They actually take this stuff seriously when they hear from constituents. 866-220-0044.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio. Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour, the second hour of our program. 1 o'clock Eastern Time. What would that be? 10 o'clock Pacific Time and all places in between. Our quote for the day from Barry Goldwater, who I worked for in 1963 as a 13-year-old going door-to-door with a in-your-heart-you-know-he's-right bumper or button on my lapels. Our quote for the day from Barry Goldwater: you don't have to be straight to shoot in the military. You just have to be able to shoot straight. Paul Cameron of the Family Research Institute, familyresearchinst.org, the website, disagrees. Paul Cameron, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Former General John Shalikashvili, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in the beginning of this year in an op-ed in the New York Times, basically came out and said, why don't we join the rest of the civilized world? The United Kingdom allows gays in their military. France allows gays in their military. The Netherlands, Belgium, Sweden, Finland, Norway, Denmark, Germany, South Africa, the Czech Republic, Israel, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, Austria, Spain, Estonia, Lithuania. What's wrong with the United States?
Well, because right now we have the benefit of not having them in, and of course we actually fight wars. Now the Brits.
Well, actually, we do have gays in the military. They're just not allowed to speak about it.
That's right. They're always getting in, and the data is pretty similar to what just happened to Air Force Captain Taylor out of Elgin Air Force Base in Florida. That is, he just got sentenced to 50 years for drugging and raping four men, four of them in the military, and two other guys that he attempted rape.
I think you have to admit, Paul Cameron, that there's a whole lot more men raping women than there are men raping men in the military.
Oh, I'm sure that's the case. We know already that women are a poor choice for the military in that I think the latest figures are 1 out of 10 is pregnant at any given time. It goes up.
So you don't think women should be in the military either, only straight men?
Well, unfortunately, we need to protect the country. And if you want to do a good job of killing people and breaking things, you want to have good morale. And that's why you want gays out. I'd call
why
you...
has it not? Why has having gays in the military in the United Kingdom, which arguably has a culture closest to the United States, you know, compared with, for example, Norway or New Zealand or whatever,
sure,
not been a problem for them at all? In fact, their military is quite proud of the fact that they welcome gays.
Yeah, these guys don't fight wars. So if you don't,
they've been our principal ally in Iraq.
Pardon me?
They have been our principal ally in Iraq.
Oh, I'm not talking about the Brits. I was talking about Norway and, you know, so forth.
I'm talking about the Brits. The United Kingdom allows
the Brits,
gays in the military.
They've only had this a while, and I haven't seen their files. I've seen the files here in the States, and they're just like what we saw here with
the... Well, the British actually did a study, and after lifting the ban, the British military personnel performed internal studies to assess whether openly allowing gays in the military had any detrimental effects. They found no significant difference in their operations.
Well, ours definitely had, and I'd call...
Well, we've never allowed gays in the military,
my country,
so how could we have...
Well, wait, Gary Studs, remember old Gary Studs? He commissioned...
The congressman from Massachusetts.
That's right.
The gay congressman
openly
from Massachusetts.
Gay. And he commissioned a study of gays in the military, and they rounded up well over 100. They winnowed it down to 42 testimonies of gays that served in the military, both gays and lesbians. And what's incredible is, even though this book, this document, is supposed to convince the general public that everything will work out, you see story after story, much like Captain Taylor of the Air Force Base in Florida. Same kind of deal. Rapes and druggings and the kinds of behavioral problems that are just inimical to an organization that everybody has to depend on one another.
Which is exactly the same thing that you would see, respectfully, sir, it's exactly the same thing you would see if you looked at, and the studies were done, if you looked at the studies done back in the 40s and 50s of gays in the general population, because back then it was illegal to be gay in most states. And so when gays in the general population were identified, it was because they had committed a crime. And similarly, when you have gays in the military who are identified as being gay, it's because they've committed a crime by and large. And so if you're looking at a population of the people who have been marginalized, have been discriminated against, and are criminals, And you look at their behavior and you say, gee, their behavior seems a little odd, and they're criminals, you shouldn't be surprised at that. But if you normalize that behavior, if you say, okay, you know, being gay is fine, it's, you know, about 10% of most mammals are gay. This is you know, we're mammals. Here we are. You know, I'm assuming that you acknowledge there are gay sheep and there are rams rather, and there are.
I don't think that's true, but that's a different issue.
Well, it's not a difference.
It doesn't make any difference whether rams, we get enough baby sheep out of the rams. That's not our problem here.
But the sheep population isn't sitting around saying, gee, we think we'll discriminate against some of the gay sheep. I mean, the fact of the matter is that being gay is something that people are born with.
No,
and
that isn't a fact. It's a fact that it's almost...
Please tell me, at what age, Dr. Paul Cameron, did you decide that you were straight? At what age did you discover that you were attracted to women rather than men?
Oh, I'm not really sure. Probably somewhere in my childhood, but that really isn't...
Yeah, me too. I'd say, you know, 6, 7, 8, something like that, 9 years old, I don't know, somewhere around there. I certainly noticed that I was different than girls. And, you know, there was, and you start getting, you know, sexually interested in them during puberty.
Let's go back to gay.
The reports repeatedly come back from people who are gay that they always knew that they were interested in people of the same gender. And, you know, from their earliest childhood through puberty, how can you say it? They weren't born that way. This is not a decision that somebody makes at the age of 6.
People say these things all the time. I've actually interviewed children of that age, quite a few of them, and none of them claim they're gay. retrospectively, people fill in things. I happen to have dealt with a lot of child molesters, and almost all of them claim that, well, they knew way back when. Oh, bunk. If you believe everything that people tell you, you're not being very
conflating. Conflating child molesting and homosexuality, first of all, is despicable.
What's
secondly,
despicable?
There is far more molestation going on in the straight population than there is in the gay population. I mean,
probably more, but as a matter of fact, proportionally speaking, there's far more among the gay population.
There is no evidence of that.
Yeah, there is. If you'll go to the gay-sponsored, gay-cooperative Kinsey Institute study in 1970 in San Francisco.
Yeah, well, again, once again, looking at a time when it was a felony to be gay or to behave gay, and you're looking at populations who have been identified as gay because they have been busted.
So 23% of them admitted to having sex with children because they were illegally...
Probably the majority of them have been identified that they were gay because they got busted for it. My point is you have sample bias in these old... You can't go back to 1970 and look at statistics.
In other words, if you're looking for an excuse, it's pretty hard to argue that people in San Francisco, we're not talking about Ames, Iowa here. We're talking about San Francisco in 1970. 23% of them, 23% of the gays admitted to having sex with underage partners. Now, how many? We don't know.
What percentage of straight men do you think had sex with a girl before they were 16?
I would bet you it was
a whole hell of a lot higher than 23%.
In fact, I would bet you
that probably 40 or 50% of straight males had some sort of sexual relations with a girl before they were 16 years old.
Well, we're not talking about.
So it sounds like gay men are probably.
If you were 21 years of age, have you had sex with an underage person, a homosexual sex? 23% of the gays said yes. In the nearest I can think of, probably you're looking at 10-12%
All right, if that's the criteria, again, if you're looking at 1970 statistics, I'm sorry, I'm not buying it. Your fundamental premise here is that, number one, being gay is abnormal and it's a decision. And I would suggest that, we're out of time. I gave you the last shot there. I'm not going to take a shot at you when you can't respond to it. Paul Cameron, I appreciate you being with us here. The Family Research Institute, familyresearchinst.org is the website. Good talking with you, sir.
Hey, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann Radio Program, the place where reason is our lifestyle choice.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartmann Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Out on the plains of West Texas.
Oh, you tell him, Willie.
There's many a young boy who feels things he can't comprehend. And a small town don't like it when somebody falls between the sexes. No, a small town don't like it when a cowboy has feelings for men. And I believe to my soul that inside every man there's the feminine. And inside every lady there's the deep manly voice loud and clear. Well, the cowboy may brag about things that he's done with his women. But the ones that brag loudest are the ones that are most likely queer.
Yeah, there you go. Willie Nelson. 22 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. I didn't expect it to stop quite so abruptly. A place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Tom Hartmann here with you. Keith in Broomfield, Colorado, on the line with us. Our telephone number, by the way, 866-303-2270. If you want to drop by our live chat room, it's over at TomHartmann.com. And if there's not a link to it from AirAmericaRadio.com, we'll get one up there one of these days soon. You can drop in and say hi to our live chat room. Hey, Keith, what's up?
Hey, I just wanted to comment on that last call that you had. I was just going to talk about the brain. You know, they did some studies. You know, choices are made in the cerebrum, generally.
Sure.
They did some studies where they showed straight men, gay men, and, you know, straight and gay women, respectively, pictures of people. They showed the men pictures of other men that were pretty muscular and, you know, had parts that were
attractive men, let's say.
Yeah, we'll put it that way, in a sexually explicit way. And the response, the neurological response they got from the straight men was that in the lower functions of the brain, there were sort of instinctual reactions of, first it was the reaction of being threatened, and then it transformed into rage. Even the most, you know, it didn't matter who the man was. That was generally the response that they got. Whereas with gay men, of course, they got the lower functions of, you know, attraction, arousal.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of, that part of the brain, you know, it was happening in the midbrain. This can't be controlled by, you know, our choices.
This is not under the control of our intellect.
Exactly. This is an instinctual animalist.
No, and in my opinion, the science is just solidly in on this. And we see this right across all species, you know, right across the mammalian species, certainly. And in my mind, this is a civil rights issue. You know, the United States was founded on this idea that all men are created equal. And that time, in the 1770s, the word men literally did mean humanity. And in fact, women were voting in a lot of states up to and through the 1830s, I think, was when the last state stopped allowing women to vote. But we imperfectly acted out the idea that all people are created equal. We had slaves, women were disenfranchised, and gays were disenfranchised. And we brought, you know, we did away with slavery, and through the Civil Rights Act, we have slowly, obviously, there's still a lot of remnants of slavery around, and remnants of, not just remnants of racial hatred, of bigotry out there. I mean, it's still alive and well, but we've come a long way. And the same with equality of women. And it's time to bring gays into the American family as well, as so many other countries have already done. And bringing them into the military is part of that. I mean, it's just, this is a civil rights issue. This goes, you know, beyond decision making and culture and all this kind of stuff. This is just in my opinion, a fundamental civil rights issue.
I'd have to totally agree. I'd just done a side note to throw in. One of the things that always helps me win the debate over whether people choose to be gay. Usually, you know, when I'm having that debate with men, I just ask, did you choose to be straight? If you chose to be straight, there's something, maybe you should reconsider your position, because I didn't choose to be straight. I have that biological.
Yeah, that was the essence of my question to Cameron. I guess I should have phrased it the way you did, because that's much more pointed, and that's a good one. I'll steal that from you, Keith, if that's okay. Thanks a lot for the call. Keith, I got to move along. I appreciate it. Mark in Los Angeles. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Hey, I just have to say vive la différence, because somebody like that family research guy, he's afraid of anybody who's different from him, either physically or spiritually or politically
or sexually or sexually. He doesn't want women in the military either.
Well, spiritually, emotionally, I think that people like him view people of differences with differences as subhumans, and I'm concerned that there are more people like him that are getting on that slippery slope of uncivilized behavior.
Yeah, I think it's frankly a dangerous step, and you know, well said, Mark. Thank you, Tim. We've got just a few seconds before we've got to take a break. A quickie.
Okay, Tom. You know what's funny is what Cameron doesn't realize is that a lot of the same sex crimes, you know, adults or minor,
right,
were committed by straight men and straight women.
Right. Yeah, that was my point.
Not gay.
The yeah, the stats are, in my experience, the stats are pretty clear that straight men are far more likely to be committing sex crimes of all types, even as a percentage of men, than are
exactly.
gay men.
But you know the good thing about not having gays in the military? I mean, if I get drafted to go to Iraq,
You can stay out.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Frequently, secretly fond of each other. Say, what did you think all them saddles and boots was about?
That makes sense.
And there's many a cowboy who don't understand the way that he feels for his brother. And inside every cowboy, there's a lady that'd love to slip out.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Or at least clean elections and national health care and clean air and water and good social security and a balanced budget once in a while. All right. Ann Coulter out there trashing John Edwards because she suggests that he's effeminate. That really was the subtext, you know, the whole Limbaugh calling him the Brett girl, all that kind of stuff. Ann Coulter going after him for that. Using the word faggot. I remember when Louise and I lived in Montpelier, Vermont. We lived in Vermont for 10 years. We lived in Montpelier for 5 years. And it was during the time when civil unions came to Vermont. And Howard Dean was going to sign the bill into law that the legislature passed in response to a Supreme Court decision. And the Westboro Baptist Church folks, you know, good old Fred, what's his name, Fred Phelps or whatever his name was, and his minions were down there just four blocks from my house. I mean, I had to walk by these guys to go to the store and to the theater out in front of the state capitol with their signs that said, God hates fags, right? And that's what their sign said. And I just want to set the record straight for people who think that there's some kind of biblical basis for this. Fred Phelps and all these other guys, it's a typo. It's a typo. It's a typographic. You guys are running on a typographic error. Here, for example, Matthew 21. Just the biblical stuff, okay? This is a story about Jesus. Now, in the morning, as he returned into the city, he was hungry, and when he saw a fig tree by the road, he came to it and found nothing on it but leaves only. And he said to it, let no fruit grow on you henceforth forever. And presently the fig tree withered away. And when the disciples saw it, they marveled, saying, how soon has the fig tree withered away? That's Jesus cursing a fig tree, right? Chapter 11, verse 12. The next day they came from Bethany. He was hungry, and seeing a fig tree far off having leaves, he came, if perhaps he might find anything on it. And when he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for the time of figs was not yet. And Jesus answered and said to it, no man eat fruit of you hereafter forever. And his disciples heard it. In other words, he cursed another fig tree. And here in the Psalms, this is David, King David, Psalm 78, verse 47. He destroyed their vines with hail and their sycamore figs with sleet. This is God destroying figs. And Jeremiah 29:17. Yes, this is what the Lord Almighty says. I will send the sword, famine, and plague against them, and I will make them like poor figs that are so bad they cannot be eaten. So here's a typo. God doesn't hate fags. God hates figs. I just gave you four examples out of the Bible. That should be enough to just, you know, end the discussion, right? I'm sorry. This is really serious stuff. We're talking about people's lives here. Jeff in San Francisco, California. Hey, Jeff, welcome.
I just caught the tail end of that joke, and I'm trying to lighten up while I'm waiting online. The guy made me very mad, and usually this type of thing makes me very mad. So a couple things. I have a cousin who's been with his partner for the past 34 years. They live in the city. They are the cutest couple you ever meet. My cousin is actually an inventor, makes a good living, and they're just, you know, you would want these people included in anything, you know.
Oh, let me tell you about it. My great uncle, my father's father's brother, one of four brothers who came over from Norway together, my grandfather's brother, lived with a man down in Texas. They ran an antique store together for over 50 years. I mean, they both died in their late 70s. And my Uncle Sig, after whom one of my brothers was named, was absolutely one of the favorite people of all of us in the family. And we knew about Sig and Rudy. I mean, you know, it was not, I mean, this was the 50s and 60s when I was a little kid, and people didn't talk about it much, and we were little kids. But, you know, it was pretty obvious to everybody. And they were just the most decent, extraordinary, and wonderful human beings I've ever met in my life. And you know, obviously now as an adult, you know, here in my 50s, I know many gay couples. And this is just part of the woof and weave of America.
Absolutely. And, you know, I just wanted to say, of course, not to go too much on the attack here. Again, I'm trying to keep this light, but the statistics, you were right on in attacking this guy's statistics. It's just, well, just pardon the expression, his statistics were crap.
Yeah.
And they're basically, you know, you can make, you know, the same thing goes on with pot smokers. You know, the same, you know, the only people you really end up hearing about are the folks that get caught who are, you know.
It's called sample bias.
Yeah, it's absolutely, it's sample bias. That's exactly what that is. And last but not least, I just want to say it's really sad how our country seems to be, you know, I've visited Amsterdam, the Netherlands, and one thing I was so impressed about their culture is how they've got this strain of tolerance in their culture.
Yes.
They're based on inclusiveness. It's just woven into their culture. They want to try and find as many people as they can to include within, you know, civil society, whereas it seems like in America, it just makes me sad. You know, so much of America is all about excluding people, finding out groups. I mean, I am so proud of San Francisco because we seem to be a little icon of sanity. And, it, yeah. You know, and just, it's just, you know, we actually.
Well, you know, Jeff, one of the, pardon my interrupting you, but one of the points that you're making here is the difference between conservative and liberal morality. Conservative morality is typically about what are people doing in private. What are people doing in their bedrooms? What are they smoking in their living room? What are they doing in private? And we want to know about people's private lives. That's the conservative morality. Liberal morality is what are we all doing in public? Are there hungry among us? Are there sick among us? Are there homeless among us? Is our society just? Do we have wild imbalances of wealth in our society? These are traditional liberal values. And I would submit to you that they are traditional Jewish, Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, and Muslim values as well. And the conservative values are frankly, the traditionally paranoid values.
Scapegoating.
Yeah, yeah. Bottom line. Jeff, well said. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Jerry in Long Island, New York, listening on WWRL. Hey, Jerry, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I'm glad to speak to you. It's great. I've done a report. I'm with the Center for Inquiry, which is a national think tank, and we promote secular humanism and skepticism in science. And In the Long Island area where I live, a local representative for the American Family Association has been agitating against gay rights, and he recently emailed me and a large portion of the media here, like Newsday and the New York Times and Daily News and radio stations, about why gays should not be allowed to have civil unions or marriage rights or adopt children, and he cited a
or be in the military. I mean, that's why we had him on, because these guys are doing a major PR offensive right now.
Absolutely.
And I want to get out ahead of it and counter it before they have a chance to get
attraction. Well, he cited eight studies that support his contention that gays molest children at a greater rate than non-gays. And of course, one of the eight items was the very item that Paul Cameron quoted, the
Kinsey report.
The Kinsey report, 1970. And so I took those eight items and I did a study and tried to track down each one of those items and see what the truth was behind them. And of course, as you might imagine, the truth is a lot different than what they represent. They're basically saying that 25% of some 565 adult gays admitted to having sex with children age 16 or under. And this is what Paul Cameron is basically trying to claim. And what actually this report was that the researchers found that the essential problem was that almost half the respondents were found that in this report were found in bars, bathhouses, and sex clubs and public cruising areas, hardly the places where you'd find the average representative homosexual.
This is my point. In 1970, where are you going to find gay people?
Well, that's where they found them. That's actually in the report that's where they found them.
Amazing. Amazing.
And he doesn't tell you this, but it goes on. They also included in this report anyone who molested if you were a male adult, if you molested a child that was male, they counted you as a homosexual, even if on the scale, the Kinsey scale of 1 to 6, where 1 denotes exclusive heterosexuality and 6 denotes exclusive homosexuality, if you even were a 2, which is, means you were primarily heterosexual, they counted you as a homosexual.
So, in other words, the data was all scrambled up.
In other words, even if you were a heterosexual, never had an adult homosexual relationship, if you molested a male child, they count that as a homosexual rape.
Yeah.
The authors are so upset. Bell and Weinberg have actually posted a disclaimer. For him to use our figures to estimate differences between homosexuals and heterosexuals across the board in the general population is ludicrous. That's actually the words of the two authors of the study, referring to Paul Cameron.
And he continues to use it. Got it.
Jerry, thank you
very much. Is there a website that you have where you have, you know,
I posted it on your blog, my whole little section of this on, it's on
okay.
your
is
blog
it,
right
Is
now.
It on our blog at tomhartman.com or at
AirAmericaRadio.com?
AirAmericaRadio.com.
On your show's blog.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Jerry.
And it has the websites there.
Great.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for the good work you're doing. I mean, this is the point. It's sample bias. It's like back in the 50s. Let's look at the lives of pot smokers. Gee, an awful lot of them seem to be in jail. Well, where do you find pot smokers in 1950? In jail. I mean, it's like, what a surprise. This is called sample bias. Oh, man. Anyway. We'll be back with more of your calls and more news of the day. I'll just give you a quick recap of things going on here as we come back from the break. 45 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Viagra for your brain.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Separate worlds, following leaders of mountains of shame, looking for someone to blame. I know who I like to blame. Conservative Christian, right wing Republican, straight white American males. Saving, flag waving, brush loving, land paving, personal friends to the quails. Quite diligently, working so hard to keep the free brains of this democracy. From tree hugging, beast loving, pot smoking, barefooting, folks singing hippies like me.
And welcome back, 51 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Jane Hampshire is on the line. She's the principal blogger over at FireDogLake.com. In fact, that's your blog, isn't it, Jane?
Yes, it is, but I have a lot of co-bloggers who've been here with me.
Okay, great. And you have been blogging live from the Libby trial throughout the whole thing, pretty much.
We have. We've had somebody here from day one, jury selection.
Yeah, and so tell us, Jane Hampshire, you were there. What's going on?
About 11:30 this morning Eastern Time, we got an email saying that the jury was coming back at 12 o'clock, and everybody's heart started pounding. We went racing up to the courtroom, and the judge came in, the jury filed in, and they found Libby guilty on 4 counts. The one they didn't find him not guilty on was the Cooper charge, Matt Cooper false statement charge. And on that one, there appears to have been only one holdout.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. And everything else was unanimous, then?
Everything else, he was unanimously guilty. It was a good day to be an American.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one of the things that concerned me the most was a statement that Patrick Fitzgerald made to the press after the fact. And I'd like Alex to play that for you and just get your take on that. Fitzgerald was asked by a reporter, apparently, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, whether this conviction of Scooter Libby for, you know, what appears to be part of a larger criminal conspiracy meant that the other co-conspirators or other people involved in this criminal conspiracy were going to be next. You know, where is the investigation going? Is the vice president going next? Is Karl Rove going next? You know, are we going to go after somebody? Here's the clip.
I would say this. I do not expect to file any further charges. But basically, the investigation was inactive prior to the trial. I would not expect to see any further charges filed. We're all going back to our day jobs. If information comes to light or new information comes to us that would warrant us taking some action, we will, of course, do that.
Now, it seems to me, Jane Hampshire of FireDogLake.com, you've been blogging through this whole thing, that if we were talking about, for example, a bank robbery, and we had found and busted the guy who drove the getaway car, and he had testified in court that Joe Blow and Jane Doe were the ones who robbed the bank, and Joe was the guy who shot the teller, and there were numerous witnesses who attested to that, and there was a lot of testimony and evidence put into evidence about that, and the court, at the very end of the trial, said, yep, sure enough, this was the guy who drove the getaway car, put his butt in jail. And then the prosecutor said, yeah, but we're not going to go after the two people who actually robbed the bank. There would be a little bit of outrage.
Well, the one good thing about following this trial for over a long period of time is that you get used to the way Patrick Fitzgerald operates. And Patrick Fitzgerald has said all along that his investigation was essentially done in November of 2004. What he's been trying to do since then is prove what he already knew. So and he's also an extremely careful person who parses his words very carefully. And just before he made that comment, he said, we don't talk about people who have not been charged. So he doesn't want to light any fires. But the fact of the matter is that Louis Libby has now been found guilty. He'll try an appeal. We'll see what happens. But if he wants to cut a deal and give the special counsel more information, it was quite clear during Patrick Fitzgerald's closing statements that a cloud was still over the vice president and the White House. And so, you know, it ain't over.
Did he use that phrase?
Yes. Oh, he did during his closing statements. He said there is a cloud over the vice president and over the White House that cannot be cleared up because Louis Libby is obstructing justice.
Oh, interesting.
So if Louis Libby decides that he wants to come clean and save himself a little time in the slammer by implicating someone else, you know, that could happen.
So Scooter now has to be doing the calculus of, on the one hand, can I stretch out this appeal thing until Bush is no longer president on the assumption that he will pardon me on the way out? Or do I flip and turn state's evidence and make a deal so that I spend 6 months in a country club prison and, you know, be willing to turn on Rove and Cheney and company?
Basically, I think that's where we're at, you know. Fitzgerald needs more evidence before he can go after somebody else. And he's not Judge Larry of the Anna Nicole trial. He's not running his mouth. He's very cautious. And he
But on the other hand, if he needs more evidence, all he has to do is start issuing subpoenas. I mean, or convene another grand jury, and he's shown no inclination to do that.
Well, I think what he needs is Scooter Libby. Scooter Libby is the firewall. He's the firewall to Cheney. He's the one who knew. He's the one Cheney tasked with going out there. Until Libby wants to say, yeah, Cheney told me to do it. He doesn't have any evidence of that effect.
He just has testimony about testimony.
Yeah.
Essentially.
So he needs to crack Libby. And could that, you know, could the White House keep that from happening by promising a pardon? Yes. I'm sure they could.
I think so, yeah.
You know, it's still a good day. Afterwards, one of the jury members, Dennis Collins spoke with, I got the chance to speak with him, and he said they actually felt sorry for Libby because it was quite clear that he was the fall guy for other people, Karl Rove specifically he mentioned, but also Dick Cheney. They looked very closely at the notes he'd made on Joe Wilson's July 6th op-ed in the New York Times and said, you know, this guy got sent out to do this.
Well, Dick Cheney, those notes are in his own hand. I mean, isn't that enough evidence to begin something?
Well, it depends on what charges you're going to bring. You know, are you going to bring IPAA? Are you going to show, are you going to be able to show that, or identities protection or espionage? There are also a lot of things that have to be proven for that.
Yeah, interesting. Jane Hampshire, FireDogLake.com, the blog. Jane, thanks for the inside view.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Much appreciated. Thanks for being with us. The founder of FireDogLake.com. Coming up in the next hour, Lieutenant Colonel Colby C. Vokey of the U.S. Marine Corps is going to be here. He's the defense counsel for a young man held at Guantanamo. You're going to find it interesting. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
What do you see?
Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, fair and slightly unbalanced.
Welcome back to the place where reason is our lifestyle choice. 6 minutes past the hour. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Lieutenant Colonel Colby Vokey here, assuming, you know, all the various telecommunications gods are smiling. Today, the last day that Mercury is retrograde. Tomorrow, Mercury goes direct. The only thing I know about astrology, actually, there's two things I know about astrology. One is that, and I first discovered this actually from one of my publishers, who when Mercury goes retrograde, refuses to sign contracts, and very often won't even actually answer his phone. Everything goes to his answering machine, or his answering service. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And then I this was decades ago. And then I discovered that during the Reagan administration, Nancy Reagan, you know, was, you know, Ronnie could not make decisions when Mercury is retrograde. So number one. And the other was when I was a teenager, there was a woman I was dating who bet me a rather elaborate and certainly worthwhile bet that I'll leave to your imagination, that there are 12 zodiacal signs, 12 signs of the zodiac, and that more, and therefore six of them should comprise 50% of your friends, right? And she bet me that that would not be the case, that far more than 50% would be represented by only five signs. And I'm a Taurus, and she said that it would be the other two earth signs, which are Capricorn and Virgo, and the three water signs, Cancer, Scorpio, and Pisces. And so I spent about a month going around and asking everybody I knew what their birth sign was, and sure enough, she was right. It was like, you know, something like 70% of my very best friends were in those five signs, and it was just totally strange. That's everything I know about astrology, beginning to end, except that there's a lot of people who are really into this Mercury retrograde thing. Today, the last day, but Mercury's retrograde today, so bad news for Scooter Libby. Anyway, didn't mean to get off on that whole rant, but 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room and hang out in real time with some of the finest minds in the world, AirAmericaRadio.com, or just AirAmerica.com, if you want to drop in and post in our blog. There's also a message board over at TomHartman.com. Scott in Phoenix. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I really enjoy your show, by the way. I only had two quick comments about your interview with Paul Cameron. He was referring to San Francisco back in 1970 and said like it wasn't Iowa.
Right.
The fact is that still in San Francisco in 1970, there still weren't any type of equal protection laws. Those didn't
right. No. When do you know, by the way, what year it was that the Castro riots happened? Wasn't that like in the very late 60s or early 70s?
Yes. Early 70s, I believe.
Yeah, it was right around that time. I mean, you know, gays were being discriminated against and prosecuted in right, you know, from coast to coast in this country.
Exactly.
And still are in some places, frankly.
Absolutely, especially, yeah, back where I'm from in Memphis, I know friends who are still discriminated against daily.
Well, and explicitly in the military, and that's you know, where I wanted to start with this whole thing. I think it's time for us to come into the 21st century with our military.
I couldn't agree more.
You know, look at all the good talent.
They've also got the good translators.
Yeah, they did. We actually did. I mean, I would say that this whole thing of don't ask, don't tell has harmed national security as much as anything else. So, good point. I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were going to continue. I already moved along. Paul in Hudson, Florida. Hey, Paul, what's up?
A lot of these fundamentalist types, you know, like to quote, you know, they go for the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really look at what it says, I mean, there's a lot of quotes in the Old Testament about Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, they're always quoting that Sodom and Gomorrah. There's
sure.
always that that thing about, oh, bad things are going to happen to Sodom and Gomorrah. That's what most of the quotes are about. But there's one place in the Bible where God says, talks about Sodom and Gomorrah. And he says, now this is the sin of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters were arrogant, overfed, and unconcerned. They did not help the poor and the needy.
Oh, interesting. So that's what...
That's the only place where God says, here's why I destroyed it. Here's was their sin.
Oh, that's amazing.
Huh?
Yeah, what is that? Is that in Exodus or Genesis?
Ezekiel 16:49.
Ezekiel. Huh. Interesting. Okay. Thank you very much, Paul. It's, as an amateur biblical scholar or whatever, you know, it's, I find that's fascinating. Matthew in Sonoma County, California, listening on the Quake. Hey, Matthew, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to get back to a conversation of whether it's the eavesdropping of the government or, whether it's the impeachment of George Bush. And I'm just wondering the question of why you're so convinced that the Democrats are going to do anything different than the Republicans do. They are, you know, bound to the same power elite, the same people who have the money, who run the way we live. And why are they going to do anything different than the Republicans? And I wanted to hear what you would have to say about that.
Because we're going to take them over. You know, Matthew, by showing up at the local party meetings, by running for political office, by becoming party activists, I'd say 90% of it is showing up at the meetings. I can tell you, in my book Screwed, the last chapter of the book is the story of three people who did that, one in Colorado, one in New Mexico, and one right here in Portland, Oregon, who decided to stop complaining and actually showed up and discovered that it's really not that hard to hijack or infiltrate or take over a local Democratic Party and have an influence on the state Democratic Party and thus an influence on the national Democratic Party.
Can you give me an example of those three, how it might have made a difference?
Yeah.
On the local level to the national level?
Yeah.
People who are making the direct decisions?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The Jeff in Colorado, who's called into this program many times, was instrumental in getting one of the anti electronic voting machine planks into the, as I recall, I shouldn't try to tell his story, into the national level. Roy in New Mexico and who calls into this program from time to time, very active down in New Mexico helping take back the political apparatus of that state and also getting rid of the electronic voting machines. And here in Multnomah County, young man, Gavin White, as a result, actually, of having read my book on equal protection, showed up at the local Democratic Party and decided to get active, and a group of friends of his did. And when the governor of the state, a Democrat, was running for re-election, he just expected the biggest county in the state, the most populous. It's Portland. It's the Democratic center of the state. He just expected that they would get their endorsement, and didn't bother to show up and do his due diligence. And they didn't endorse him. They endorsed the progressive candidate progressive candidate. And as a consequence of that, well, the governor won the election. But what's happened is, a consequence of that, his positions have become far more progressive. I don't think that we're going to see overnight change. Immediate change. But the fact of the matter is that if we put all of our efforts into creating a third party, and this is not, by the way, an anti-Green Party screed, because the Green Party does extraordinary work at the local and state levels. Over 300 communities now in the United States have instant runoff voting because of the Green Party. I support the Green Party big time. I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000. Although I lived in Vermont, I knew that it was a safe vote. And my wife and I split. She voted for Al Gore and I voted for Ralph Nader. But the point is that we're not going to have a third party that at the federal level, at the national level, is really going to produce substantial change immediately. But if enough of us get active and take over the Democratic Party, and frankly, if we can reach across and find Republicans of reason and
well,
good concern,
myself,
and get them to take back the Republican Party, then I think that there's some considerable hope for this country.
I don't think that's at all going to happen. I think that as showing with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and the three Republicans running right now for the presidency, it's all about the money. And with the primaries being moved up to the first of the year of 2008, we're going to get nothing but the big names who have the big money running, the people who make the policy, who put the people in charge of their two parties, and nothing is going to get accomplished. Sure, on the local level. I mean, I'm a socialist.
No,
at the
national level, too.
At a big level. Because
Matthew, I'm not disagreeing with you at that level. And let's keep in mind, let me just make this point. Let's keep in mind, Matthew, that Franklin Roosevelt in 1932 was elected on a platform of being a moderate. And enough people got out there in the parade that he decided to get out in front of the parade and lift the flag. That Teddy Roosevelt, as vice president to McKinley, was elected as a rich white guy who was going to support the power structure and the robber barons. And he was arguably one of the most progressive people in America by 1913 when he was trying to start a third party. I mean, he took the trust buster. It's all about the parade. Say that again. Well, yeah, the Bulbous Party died up. Yeah, thanks a lot, Matthew. The Bulbous Party died up. But what I'm telling you is it's all about the parade. If you want change to happen in this country, it has to come from the bottom up because it always has. It has never come from the top down. And if we're going to change this country, we have to take it back one person at a time, one precinct at a time. And that means you and me showing up 16 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
It's like no one really meant what they meant. It's like every man's a king, every house a kingdom. It's like Joe McCarthy was our acting president. Everything's okay in the USA, in the good old USA.
And welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of us. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. 1-866-303-2270, our phone number, tomhartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room, and airamerica.com if you want to check out our blog. And let's see here. David in San Francisco, California. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. I ran into some interesting information about this Walter Reed today, and it turns out you probably saw Democracy Now! This morning, and that Halliburton or Halliburton cronies got a piece of the action of Walter Reed.
I didn't see it, because I'm on the air doing a local show at that time, but I did the story. In fact, I have it here someplace, and you're absolutely right that it was
they essentially, I found a really tidy little piece of information about the guy who, let's see, the quote here is, Hefgen will oversee all work provided by KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, for the U.S. government. And this is a guy who was the former president and CEO of J.A. Jones Incorporated, which, gosh darn it, it went bankrupt in 2000. And so this headline is from some Florida business paper and Crossland Perpetual.
The article by Joel Wendland. Is that what you're talking about? In
Ashley Gibson. I'll email it over to you.
Okay. That's okay, because I've got the thing right here. The Army Times is reporting that Henry Waxman's checking into this thing about George Waitland, and there's this leaked memo that points to privatization of the hospital as the source of many of the problems. According to the Army Times, the memo described how privatization caused as many as 250 members of the staff to leave in what appears to be a cost-cutting measure. A company called IAP Worldwide Service, run by a former Halliburton executive, took a $120 million contract to run portions of the hospital services called facilities management. That would be like, you know, running that these rat-infested hotels.
Well,
immediately after, the facilities management staff was reduced to 50 privately employed workers.
Sure. Now, if you can imagine how gross that is, there's the next part. If you take your calculator out, and we got some math whizzes out in the audience, $100 million divided by 91,000 tons of ice. Well, this was the ice that in Katrina ended up driving thousands, up to 4,000 miles in every direction but toward rescue. And right. It was $100 million worth of ice, and that division of 91,000 into 100 million, that's how much per ton they paid for ice. So this Katrina ripoff of $100 million was managed by this same company and by this guy. And so,
the problem, yeah. No, I got it. I got it. Yeah, I'm right there with you, David. And thank you for pointing it out. This is the same thing as Bush saying that if we gave millionaires and billionaires $550,000, they would create one job and that would be a good thing. I kid you not. He said if we give $550,000 to a wealthy person, that wealthy person will create one job and that would be a desirable thing. This is what he campaigned on. Here it is. So you take $550 billion and you divide it by 1 million. It comes out to $550,000 per job. And, in fact, here's George Bush making the statement.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs.
Now, you know, again, where was the media? Where was anybody saying, hey, wait a minute, $550,000 per job? I mean, if John Kerry had come along and said, you know, the government's going to spend $550,000 to create one job, which will probably pay $12,000 a year, or $15,000, maybe $20,000, maybe even $30,000, but it's going to cost us a little more than $500,000, I think he would have been laughed out of town. But because Bush said it, the media gave him a pass on it. Bob in Bailey City, California. Hey, Bob.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Going back to gay rights and so on, I wanted to point out something about framing the debate. There's always discussion of gay marriage, and it's not about gays marrying. It's about people of the same sex. It's about same-sex marriage. Bisexuals do exist, and I know that complicates the argument a bit, but along the same line, it's not about same-sex marriage. It's about same-sex marriage rights. It's about the specific federal and state rights that governments offer.
Yeah, and some lesbians would prefer to be called lesbian than gay, and so probably same-sex marriage is the cleaner term there, and same-sex marriage rights. Yeah, good point.
And when you distinguish it that way, you point out that it's about these federal rights and governmental response to marriage, and not about the religious rights. It brings out the truth that people who are opposing same-sex marriage are not opposing it because they're worried that, you know, someone will be able to visit their partner in the emergency room. It's because they want to punish people for being gay.
It's either their fear or their religion or both. Yeah, good point. Well made, Bob. Thank you. And as I said, this is a civil rights issue. There's you know, thousands of laws, state, federal, and local, that use the word marriage that refer to, you know, specific things that people need to have. 27 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
It's like everything and nothing leads to wisdom. It's like no one really meant what they meant. It's like every man's a king, every house a kingdom. It's like Joe McCarthy was our acting president.
Yeah, but we can change it. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news. Lieutenant Colonel Colby C. Volkey of the United States Marine Corps is on the line with us. Lieutenant Colonel, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello, Tom. Well, thank you very much for having me on.
Glad to have you here with us. You are the Regional Defense Counsel for the Western Region. Does that mean that you're a JAG officer?
I am. And my job is I supervise all the Marine Corps defense lawyers basically west of the Mississippi.
Okay. And you are involved in the case of a young man by the name of Omar Kadar.
I do. I represent Omar. I was first assigned to his case back in November of 2005 and started visiting him, I think, in January of last year. And I've been representing him ever since at the military commissions process.
So tell us his story.
Okay, Omar was captured in Afghanistan. He was a 15-year-old boy when they captured him. He was captured after a battle between some local folks and U.S. forces and Northern Alliance forces. He was captured. He was taken to Bagram. He was wounded. He received he had shrapnel in his eye and his chest. He also was shot several times, and he was taken to Bagram and was interrogated almost immediately. So he was if you can picture a 15-year-old boy who's been treated. He's laying there with wounds in his body. He's under medication, and they start interrogating him right away. And then that interrogation continued on from there, and then all the way till he was moved to Guantanamo.
And what's his nationality?
He is Canadian. He's got the rest of his family lives in Canada. His father died a couple of years ago in Pakistan, but his family is Canadian, and they live up in the Toronto area.
Yeah, and is there any disputing that he was fighting against American soldiers? I mean, was he actually a combatant on the field of battle?
Well, and that's what the charges suggest, is that a battle occurred. And I think it's been commented on the press quite a bit that a battle occurred out near a little village near the town of Khost in eastern Afghanistan when U.S. forces, Northern Alliance forces, attacked a house in which Omar is one of the people that was in that house.
I see.
And then it was during the battle one of the American soldiers was killed, and Omar is now charged with the murder of that soldier, among other charges.
I see. And you're defending him.
I am.
And do you think? And I'm assuming you believe he's innocent of that.
Absolutely. The reason why he's innocent is because these military commissions are supposed to be reserved for war crimes. And when you think of war crimes, people think, well, a death occurred, perhaps it was a crime, it happened during combat operations, therefore it must be a war crime, but that's not the case. War crimes, you got to think of the scale of Gehring.
I cannot hear Colonel Volke.
I'm sorry?
I cannot hear anything, actually.
Are you there? Are you there?
Yeah, I am. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you there for a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Carry on, sir.
Okay. These crimes that they're alleging, they must be war crimes in order to be able to take them to a military commission. And
just fighting in battle is not a war crime. That's called war.
Absolutely not. It is not.
Right. So there's a difference between being in a war and committing a war crime. A war crime is doing something outside of the accepted norms of warfare, like Hitler gassing the Jews or
right.
murdering prisoners who've been taken prisoner on the field of battle.
Exactly. Another good example that would classify as a war crime or a crime against humanity that would be appropriate a commission would be the folks who attacked us on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who took part in that or the planning of that would definitely be a ripe subject for a military commission or tribunal.
Right. Now, could you argue then that taking somebody on the field of battle and particularly a 15-year-old, and subjecting them to years of prolonged interrogation, I understand you're alleging that he has been actually physically tortured as well as psychologically tortured, that might be a war crime, that the United States has committed a war crime?
There's definitely something to that. And I think international law kind of supports that position, that if we take certain steps that violate Geneva themselves, then that in itself can be a war crime.
So if you don't mind my asking your story, sir, we're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Colby Volke of the United States Marine Corps. He's the Regional Defense Council Western Region, and he's representing Omar Kadar, who was taken at the age of 15 just passed his 20th birthday at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, last September. Because you have taken the stand of you are the defense counsel for this young man, have you suffered any consequences as a result of this?
It's a very difficult job and often uncomfortable. There have been whispers or hints or rumors of trying to do something against me. I've had a gag order placed on me. I've had kind of suggestions of ethical violations and other violations. I've kind of been a little bit worried that I'd be able to even keep my job at one point. Being a defense counsel in the military is often difficult because it's kind of inherent tension that you represent someone that that goes against what the commander would want, and he's the one who orders the courts.
Right, you're defending somebody who's against your own team, basically.
Right, but yeah. Guantanamo was about 10 times worse because it's not just you're not just dealing with a local commander in a court martial; you're dealing with the entire federal government.
Mm-hmm.
So it often puts you in a very difficult, conflicting position.
Lieutenant Colonel Volkey, what is the main message that you want to communicate to our listeners about this?
Well, first of all, the process here with these new rules that have developed, there's been a lot of talk that it's fair. But let me get one thing perfectly clear. This new process is anything but a fair and open trial. That's not what they've developed here. And what we need to do is we need to go back and either use a court-martial manual that's been established for over 50 years that was designed for military commissions, or take these guys to federal court so we can have a real full and fair trial. Because right now, you can't have it.
Now, I understand under the new rules that a person can be sentenced to death based on hearsay evidence, based on evidence that was gained during torture, based on confessions that were made under torture. None of these things would be admissible in a normal court of law. And none of them would actually even be admissible in a normal military court, would they?
No, not at all. I mean, there's certain law that applies that would prohibit a lot of this kind of evidence from coming in. And if there was an exception that would allow it, you would look to our case law or our rules to say, okay, here's an exception for it. That's one of the problems we have here is you don't even know what law to look to. I'm not sure if there is a body of common law that you can look to say, okay, well, let's look at this case and this tells us how to do it.
Right.
That's non-existent here.
How does the recently passed Military Commissions Act affect what you're doing, or does it not?
Oh, it does. It affects us greatly. It did change the old system, which was absolutely horrific. And that led to the new rules that were just developed several weeks ago. What it does do is affirmatively tries to strip the right of habeas corpus from all of the detainees down in Guantanamo.
Habeas corpus being the right to show up in a courtroom and say, confront me with my accuser, give me a trial, and give me access to due process.
Absolutely. And to even challenge your status of someone who could be subject to these commissions.
Right. So without habeas corpus, you can be thrown in jail forever and never heard from again, and they don't even have to give you your day in court. And that's what the Military Commissions Act has done, is it's done away with the right of habeas corpus to these folks. Some would argue to all of us, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's kind of a scary thought that we're out there. Now, we go into Afghanistan. We had every right in the world to go into Afghanistan after 9/11. And we're trying to be the number one promoter of democracy and democratic ideals around the world. Yet right in our own backyard down in Guantanamo, we're running these trials like that. I think it's hypocritical, and I think it's offensive.
So what should we Americans do? I mean, I've written about this, and we talk about on the radio fairly regularly that we should encourage our elected officials to repeal the Military Commissions Act at the very least, and the onerous provisions of the John Warner Defense Appropriations Bill attendance. We only have about half a minute here left, sir. What do you think that the people of America should be doing?
That's exactly what they need to do. Everyone needs to contact their congressman and say, enough is enough. Let's put an end to these commissions. If we're going to try them, let's do it fair. And let's bring these guys either to a regular court or bring the courts into the U.S. where it's even accessible to deal with them. Because right now, it's impossible to effectively represent somebody who's in Guantanamo. It's just practically the logistics, all the obstacles they put up, you can't effectively represent someone down there.
And yet that's the job you've been given.
Absolutely. That I've been ordered to do.
Yeah. And this is, again, a young man who was taken into custody at the age of 15, who you believe to be innocent, who is facing a death penalty.
That's correct.
Amazing. Lieutenant Colonel Colby Vokey of the United States Marine Corps. Sir, thank you very much for the very difficult work that you're doing and for coming on the radio and talking with us about it.
Thank you, Tom.
I wish you the very best.
All right, you too.
45, thank you. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, The True People's Radio.
Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. There's
a superstore out by the interstate. I get my shirts and my tires and my eggs in one place. I guess it's convenient. It is what it is. We save a few dollars, but what is the cost? When they don't know your name, seems like something is lost. I dream of a world that's not all the same, where a man with a vision can still make his way, where the middle guy says to the big boys, you can't shut me down. I dream of a world that's a two-paper town.
And welcome back. Telling the truth that multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know about and weren't thinking about. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, 9 minutes before the hour. Victoria Jones with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
Of course, the big news is Scooter Libby got convicted on 4 out of 5 counts, and that he's going to appeal and that he's going to be out on bail for a long time. And all the speculation that I'm hearing, and we talked with one of the Jane Hampshire, one of the bloggers at Firedog Lake, who'd sat through the entire trial a little earlier. It seems that Patrick Fitzgerald, without Libby rolling over on Cheney and or Rove, won't have the ability to go after them. Are you hearing anything different?
No, not really hearing anything different than that. There isn't really a sense that this is going to go very much further than it has done. And as you know, of course, Libby's demanding a new trial entirely. By the way, the office pool in the White House press corps, I probably would have scooped, because I was saying he was going to be convicted on something small, and just about everybody else who I spoke to, including luminaries, they all thought he was going to be acquitted.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. Yep. When his defense lawyer basically offered no defense at all and got up and started crying, saying, please give me back Scooter?
I think it was either lack of faith in the jury or lack of faith in the justice system overall, or just cynicism with Washington.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now the pool is, when is the pardon going to happen, right?
Well, exactly. And, of course, Senator Reid has already made that request that it not happen. As you know, Deputy White House Press Secretary Dana Perino refused to countenance anything on those lines.
Oh, that's interesting. So I didn't realize Harry Reid had specifically come out and said, give us the statement right now that you're not going to pardon Scooter Libby.
Yes, he did. He did that almost immediately after the verdict.
Huh. Well, that puts a little extra pressure on the White House and on Mr. Libby, for that matter.
Yes, it certainly does.
Now, I understand that Democrats in the House of Representatives and the Senate, at least in the House of Representatives, have begun over this last few days issuing subpoenas in a variety of investigations. What's the state? Any news on those fronts?
I don't have very much in the way of details on those fronts, because I have been covering the White House, with the exception of this morning when I covered the Senate Armed Services Committee. So I have not been as much involved in the oversight of the House of Representatives as I could have been. So I'm afraid I'm unable to bring you very much on that, Tom.
Okay.
That's
quite all right. Anything else happening in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, I did ask Dana Perino a question about Karl Rove, going back to May the 4th, 2003. I asked, during the week of May the 4th, 2003, did Karl Rove speak to anybody in the executive or legislative branch of government about the Iranian secret proposal for negotiations with the United States?
Hmm.
And she said that she had actually looked into this. She didn't blow up my question. She looked into this, and he had no memory of talking to anybody.
In other words, it was Karl Rove who killed the thing that Bob Ney brought to him?
Well, in other words, Karl Rove has no memory of talking to anybody, i.e., he has no memory of talking to Bob Ney.
Oh, interesting. And Bob Ney now is in prison, so he's not talking to anybody.
And, of course, Bob Ney has no credibility whatsoever because he's in prison.
Right. So Karl Rove, if Karl Rove really blew up American foreign policy and screwed up the whole Mideast, by getting Bob Ney in jail, he's done a very good job of covering his own backside.
He's done an excellent job. Of course, there's still the State Department, where Condoleezza Rice claims that she never saw the proposal for negotiations, but those below her say it's absolutely impossible that she would not have seen that proposal.
Right, right. But she's stonewalling as well.
Yes.
Well, is anybody in Congress going to investigate this? I mean, I've brought this up with two members of the House and one senator personally. And all of them have basically responded like, oh, that's very interesting, but somebody else is going to have to follow up on it, kind of thing.
That's the impression that I get. I don't get the impression that there's any energy for this, that there's any sense of urgency about this. There's almost a sense that, this is going to sound weird, but there's almost a sense that this proposal simply cannot exist because it is so far-fetched, even though it clearly does exist.
Yeah, I was going to say that nobody's disputing the fact that it actually was made. And,
right.
And in fact, the Swiss ambassador was reprimanded for having communicated it to Bob Ney.
Right. But it's so far-fetched.
By the administration.
It's so far-fetched that I don't think anybody wants to grab hold of it.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Victoria, thanks for the report.
Thank you very much.
Good to hear from you today.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. 1-866-303-2270. Lee in Des Moines. Hey, Lee, what's up? Lee?
How are you, Tom?
Good. Actually, let me flip you over to the other side of the board.
I just wanted to comment on your book. My wife bought your book, Screwed, and gave it to me, and I'm enjoying it very well. I haven't finished it yet. But I don't know whether you touched on it towards the end or not, because I haven't got that far, but the role unions played in the demise of the middle class.
Oh, well, the role that the unions played in creating the middle class and the role that the death of the unions or this 20th century war against
them. I'm 75 years old, and I was a locomotive. I retired as a locomotive engineer, and I hired out in 1950. And almost everybody on the railroad, at least the working men, belonged to the union and were Democrats. And then as the unions did their job and got us a lot of money, and we could buy stocks and things. All of a sudden, a lot of the union guys became Republicans.
Yeah, there you go, Lee. I've got to wrap it up. That's an interesting point. The middle class got affluent enough that they thought they were Republicans. Coming up on tomorrow's program, Chris Slattery, conservative, is going to talk about the grassroots abortion wars. Larissa Alexandrovna will be here, and Tim O'Brien. Should be an interesting day. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.